welcome back to another episode of Rule of Three. Two comics, three topics, 10 minutes each. The perfect podcast for your modern lifestyle. I'm Brian Miller, and on the other side of the mic, we've got Tim Slagle.
Hey.
And we got to sort of a downer show that we're gonna bring it back up at the end. That is our vow to you.
Hopefully.
Yes, we're going to be talking some comedy later and then talking some Tom Petty later. But first, unfortunately, inevitable, little behind the scenes curtain, as it were, peek. We usually record this on Monday. Today's Tuesday because the Las Vegas shooting incident on Sunday night really didn't. Yeah, I went to bed. I don't know about you. I went to bed and saw that it had happened, but there was no information. I mean, they didn't have any. No notion of a
body
count. No,
I wasn't even there. I got up, I opened the news, and said, "Oh, what funny things can Brian and I talk about today? What wacky things happened in the news this morning?" And I opened the news, and there that was. And it's like,
I saw. I was on Twitter, just going to bed, and I was just scrolling through, and I saw a news alert about it. But it was so. It was so fresh that they didn't have. I think they said two confirmed dead at the time, which obviously, in retrospect, was tragically much, much smaller than the ultimate toll would be. And but I remember thinking, "Oof, boy, that's a bummer," you know. And then waking up and then seeing the number of 500 people injured, and it's like, "Whoa, okay, that was a bigger incident than I realized before I went to bed."
And a lot of people are assuming mm-hmm. that means that there were 500 people shot.
Yeah, well, there was a couple of points I wanted to talk over with you, and that's one of the ones I wanted to get at, which is, and obviously it's not to like diminish, not to diminish the injuries or anything, but yeah, it's like 500 people injured, but you figure in a crowd of people fleeing. Like I was reading some eyewitness accounts, and they're talking about one girl having had like a broken leg from trying to like jump over a fence.
I'm sure when the casualty reports are more specified, it will be a lot of the injuries were from the ensuing stampede.
Sure. Or throwing yourself to the ground, you know, sure. Or rolling under a tree, you know, whatever, you know, I mean, obviously.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if some of the dead actually were, you know, the people actually were like climbing over each other to get out of there.
It's always possible. I mean, geez, you think, you know, people got killed trying to rush into the doors at a Rolling Stones concert in the 60s.
There was the Who concert.
Concert. Was there also Rolling Stones, or I'm mixing up Who and Altamont, I think.
Yeah, I think the Rolling Stones was they hired the Hells Angels.
Right, I'm mixing those
and
up.
Paid them with beer.
Right, but wasn't it like six people died in the Who incident or something like that? It was a pretty big number. I'm actually always myself one of my biggest anxiety points is really large crowds. I really don't like being in really large crowds just because, like, you know, man, when and obviously it's not to fault anybody, you know, in that kind of chaotic thing, you're just doing what you got to do. It's not like the Who thing is its own.
Well, we had a similar incident in Chicago. There was a nightclub.
Oh, I was in Chicago when that happened.
Was
it caught fire, right?
No, it's actually interesting. To me, it really shows the difference between cultures in America. There were two incidents that happened almost a couple, like 2 months apart. Mm. And one was at a nightclub in Rhode Island where Great White
performing. I'm mixing up news stories again. Yeah. Right? Great White.
And the other one was the E2. Mm-hmm. It was on the south side of Chicago, and it was a nightclub. And essentially what happened at the E2 is two ladies started arguing over whose fur coat was nicer and got in a fight. And one pepper sprayed the other one in the face.
It was the pepper spray. Yeah.
And then somebody says, "It's Bin Laden."
And this was probably a year after 9/11-ish. I think I was probably a junior in college at that point.
Sure. And everyone ran for the door, and people didn't want people sneaking in, so the doors were chained.
The chained door. Boy, you got a good memory for this. I it was a big story in Chicago at the time. I remember I had a girl I went to college with, one of her friends died in it.
Right. And then the Great White thing happened. They had on stage, they had pyrotechnics, and it actually started they also had like that foam, that audio foam there mm-hmm. on the back of the stage. They didn't tell the club they were going to do pyrotechnics. They just brought them in, and it started the foam on fire, and the club was engulfed in flames in a matter of seconds. Well, minutes. But here's where the difference in culture is in one club, there was no threat, but people were trying to but people were injured by the evacuation.
Mm-hmm.
In the other one, there was a threat, and the people just sat there going, oh, fire's cool.
Great White fans, no less.
Right. If it had been reversed, if it had been a fire in the, the audience in the Black Club had been in the Great White and seen the fire, they would have gotten out of there because all the exits were open.
Yeah, it's kind of like it's the classic horror movie thing. Well, don't go in that room. Hell no, what are you doing? Yeah, it's the...
Right. And if the Great White had been performing in E2, somebody would have said Bin Laden, they would have gone, oh, they're going to bring up Bin Laden. This is cool.
he's going to do a guest appearance. So the other thing, it'll be interesting to see the tallies on that and the numbers. The other interesting thing, and it's something that I think you might be surprised that we will kind of agree on. There's a big debate, there's a big argument right now over whether or not to call this terrorism. And I don't think it should be, as far as I can tell. And I understand people's impulse of saying, like, you know, there's the, like, Dylann Roof was a terrorist, and there are some people who will be hesitant to call a white guy with an agenda terrorism versus a Muslim guy with an agenda a terrorist, right? But, I mean, it's not really terrorism if the guy didn't have an agenda, right?
Well, we don't know that.
And we don't know that, right. Obviously, if it turns out that
there is going to be an assumption that would get a CBS executive fired, of what side of the political aisle people at a country music fest would be on.
Sure, or somebody who would shoot into the country music fest, which is another, like, I guess, you know, this whole, you when you see the guy's brother interviewed, and people just seem genuinely shocked versus, you know, when, like, for instance, the flip side being, say, Ted Kaczynski's brother turns him in going, yeah, we knew, we started to think old Teddy was up to something there. And this whole thing puts me in mind of Charles Whitman, probably the first famous mass shooter, I would say, who climbed up
Charles
in the clock
tower.
Right? Climbed up in the clock tower.
Oh, clock tower guy.
Yep. The original clock tower shooter in the 60s, I think it was. It was at a university in Texas.
Yep.
And it turns out, I believe even in his suicide note, he said, like, something's wrong with my brain or whatever. And when they did the autopsy, they found that he had a brain tumor. And the thought is that Whitman was sort of biologically driven insane. You know, that he didn't have what you would think of as like classic mental illness or symptoms of that, but the tumor caused radical behavior changes that led him to do this random crime.
This one though took a lot of planning.
Eh?
He had two cars. Which means he had been ferrying guns into the hotel room over a period of days.
Sure.
He had two cars there. Had to get the suite you want.
Thought about that.
In a hotel that size, it's I want this room.
Because you probably want an elevation of a certain level, but you obviously want the view that faces the. Because he had the,
yeah.
He could go out two windows, right? Like, yeah.
Yeah, it was like a corner suite.
Yeah. But so I mean, although I guess you could be, I'm not like I'm super dedicated to this Whitman theory, but you know, I guess you could have been driven kind of mad to the planning phases, you know, for your madness could go on for a couple of weeks or something, you know. Or, I don't know. It's just interesting. The guy doesn't seem to have any political affiliation or have left. You usually, if it's a terrorist act, you leave some kind of note, right? Or some kind of...
Well, from the conspiracy angle, there is a picture going around of a guy that looks a lot like him wearing a pink pussy hat and a NASA pink matching pink NASA T-shirt.
Well, but from the conspiracy theory angles, there also have been blamed it on multiple other guys who allegedly were with the Democratic Party. So,
yeah. Oh no, no, I'm sure.
I don't know. It'll be, and you know, and we got to wrap this segment up here in a second. But real quick, I will say the reason, you know, one of the reasons we didn't want to go yesterday morning was just that there was so little information that it seems irresponsible to talk about it. And you know, as you said, like I guess even we don't really know that much more now.
Yeah,
we know the scope of the actual event is probably about as much as we learned.
It's still a puzzle. And here's the thing too: if he had fully automatic weapons, which is what is speculated, mm-hmm. the BATF will have records on those weapons, and they will know who. And there's only a couple hundred, you know, people on the list of people who have fully automatic weapons. The BAT legally, mm-hmm. and the BATF knows everyone.
Sure, that's it. Unless they could be illegally converted, however, correct?
Right.
So.
Which again, we don't know.
Right. One thing we do know: horrible tragedy, and we have to leave the segment. It seems like this is not going to be something that people are gonna. We're gonna be talking about this one and trying to figure this one out for a while, I think. So, on to slightly less depressing topic.
Number two. Back on the rule of three. In the third segment, we're going to be talking about comedy, something happy, something light, something merry. But right now, second depressing topic of the week, it's we were by delaying the show a day, we were gifted with an obituary.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, we didn't know if there was going to be an obituary because it seemed... it was, no, he's just in the hospital. No, he's dead. No, he is still alive. No, he's dead.
Yeah, I saw someone on Twitter say, today was such a bad day, Tom Petty died twice.
I remember Tom Petty. I remember when he broke out of the scene. He came out in the middle of the new wave thing.
Mm-hmm, sure.
That was really popular at the end of the 70s. Which is why his name is Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, because that's what all the bands were doing there at the time. That was right now the big thing for bands. Mm-hmm. I just pointed this out to my niece and she rolls her eyes and thinks I'm old. But there's like a dozen bands right now that have the in the middle.
Such as.
Run the Jewels, Foster the People.
Oh yeah, yeah, sure.
Young the Giant, Tickle the Whiskers. Okay, I made that one up.
No, yeah, that's a good. Well, yeah, because like, well, there's a Graham Parker in The Rumor. You know, Elvis Costello those, right. And whatever his
The Attractions.
Yep, there you go. Yeah, that's a good point.
All the bands were doing that back then. I can't remember. There was one out of Detroit that was kind of done ironically that came like Square the Root or something like Square in the Root or something like
Mott the Hoople.
Like Flash in the Pan was another one that came out kind of ironically with that. And that's why it was Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers. John Mellencamp. That's why the record companies gave him the Cougar. Called it, no, you can't do that now. That's not what's selling. It's you can't be John Mellencamp. It's got to be John Cougar.
Yeah.
And he hated it. And that's and took him the rest of his career to get rid of the Johnny Cougar. But that's why he was Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
Yeah, usually if you want to get rid of a Cougar, you just turn on UFC. God, that was a lame joke, but I couldn't help. I couldn't stop myself. That was a compulsive behavior. That was a comedic equivalent of cutting. Why do I hurt myself like this? Why do I do this?
It's and a lot of people a lot of people thought he was new wave for a while, but he really wasn't. Never was. He was just good rock and roll.
Yeah, I mean, and, kind of the. I mean, if you were to try to pick kind of the you know, what's the dead center of rock and roll? Not center in a bad way, but like, you know, it's some of the kind of ballsy, you know, like Zeppelin's way out there on the dude rock kind of spectrum, you know, and like Dylan starts kind of going a little towards the kind of poetic folky or whatever. I mean, you're Tom Petty might be kind of dead center of just like rock. Rock.
There's
right
no,
there.
There's no edge. You know, there's no,
pretense, there's no, really.
Yeah. No pretense, no political stance, no gloom, just happy rock and roll,
yeah, but not pop, you know, it doesn't tip into that syrupy, you know,
it's a yes.
I never thought of it until just now.
Never any auto tune. No. Never any break into rap. After the bridge.
right. Come to think of it, maybe one of the best things he ever did was just a lot of what he didn't do. I can't really ever think of Tom Petty falling into too many trends. I mean, aside from, you know, say the end, the Heartbreakers kind of naming, but
right.
He didn't, you know, his music's and his style, everything is, it changes and evolves, but kind of internally, and it's pretty darn consistent for his entire career.
Yeah. Yeah. No cliches. No, nothing, you know, no long extended sweaty painful guitar solo, which is one of my favorite memes, by the way, where they replace guitar solo pictures with a giant slug.
Yes, I love that. That is very funny. They look so horrified.
And all of a sudden, yeah, the face that the guitarists makes perfect sense.
Yeah, whoever came up with that is a genius.
I had never seen him live. Have you ever seen him live?
No, you know, it's interesting. I'm not a huge Tom Petty fan, but which is not to say that I don't like Tom Petty quite a bit. You know, it's like he's sort of always a presence on the radio as long as I've been alive. I've always liked him. There's a bunch of Tom Petty songs I like, but I'm not a big concert guy anyway, and so I was never like really compelled to like go seek it out live.
Sure. Sure, it's what I'm saying now. I'm disappointed that I ever did. It was apparently just a real great, just a great rapport with the audience, and then would go into his hits, and you'd say, oh yeah, and he would do a whole show, and it was this is from our upcoming album. It's like, oh God.
Yeah, and you do forget, you know, he's kind of the Kinks are like that for me. When I listen to a Kinks record. Like every fourth song, I'm like, oh yeah, this is a Kinks song. I really like this, you know. Like, it's like I remembered it's a song that I like. You know, Petty's got a bunch of songs. Like, oh yeah, that's a Petty song. That's a really good song.
Yeah, yeah, it's just an amazing catalog that he was able to put out, and also, I think the saddest thing about Tom Petty's passing is that he died of natural causes. And we are getting to that point where the rock legends are not dying of some heinous thing that's going to be a joke. They're not dying with a plastic bag over their head or a drug overdose, choking on their own vomit, drowning in a swimming pool. No, it's just natural causes, just passing away.
Yeah. He just played his 40th. They just played on a tour for their 40th anniversary. I guess I'd say he just wrapped up a really, really big tour. I mean, maybe that – I'm not saying cause, but, you know, maybe the stress and the effort and fatigue of all that maybe warmed down a little bit. I don't know. I think he would have wanted it any other way. Probably.
It would have been, it was about 1977. It would have been about 40 years since the release of Damn the Torpedoes. Mm-hmm. So
pretty impressive.
Yeah.
40 years really, I mean, I'm sure to him there felt like certain peaks and valleys here and there, but 40 years pretty consistently. I mean, I don't think he ever fell out of favor really much at all, did he?
No, I just saw that Madonna's last album only sold 3,000 copies.
Wow.
And and her career is just a little bit shorter than his.
Yep. Yeah.
So I don't think he ever had a 3,000 album release.
No, definitely not. And like I said, it's
of course U2's last album release was given away free on iTunes.
Yeah.
and people complain.
Yeah. I mean, technically, shouldn't that count as negative album sales if you give a bunch of them away and you get them back?
And then people demand that they be erased from there.
Yeah, it's like my buddy, I'd forgotten this joke. My buddy, a sports writer buddy, Kevin, reminded me of the old joke about somebody left two Vikings tickets on the dashboard of their car. And when they came back to their car, they found out that somebody had broken their windshield and left four more.
Yeah, that's always that's always depressing. It's I got a bunch of postcards to promote album sales, and I had to get rid of them. You know, yeah. I just can't collecting dust.
Oh, those were the Jack Davis drawing of you, right?
I think that might have been
the one. There was a little stack of those at Acme for a while.
Yeah, see what I mean? Yeah. and so I was saying I got to get rid of them. So I'm handing them out after the show. And then go outside in the lobby and then pick them all up again.
Like a boomerang.
and start handing them all out again. Hey, I'm going to be at Acme in 2 weeks. I'm going to try handing out candy.
Oh, that's a great idea.
That's
really fun. That's a really fun idea.
So, yeah, if you're in the Twin Cities, October 26th through oh no, I'm looking at September. What's wrong with me?
It's probably like the 25th or the 30th, right? That sounds about right. I can look it up here. 24th to the 28th.
Yeah, 24th to the 28th.
Yep.
I should know that. But I'm gonna be handing out candy after the show.
I like it. And obviously, I'll
pick up outside of the door.
Yeah. So if any listeners want to come out, I'm sure I'll be at least one of the shows. In the lobby or something, hanging out. So come see. It's the one half Crash and Burn reunion tour.
And not to get too dark, but Tom Petty was not that much older than me. So you never know when you're catching the last show. But
we're supposed to get happier toward the end of the show, Tim. We're supposed to get happier at the end of the show.
But you do. Well, for some people, that might be happy. But you do know when the segment's over. And it is.
And on the final segment of Rule of Three, a little happier. Topic. Let's shift to something happy. This was genuinely happy. This was really fun. Speaking of Acme, I did a couple of fill-in dates at Acme Tuesday, Wednesday before Chris Hardwick came in and sold the joint out nine times over or whatever. And you know, I'm sure he could have filled it up.
Yeah, that was amazing. Did you see his show?
I didn't. I opened for him like 2 years ago when he was here.
Yeah, it looked like he didn't do a standard show. It's from pictures I've seen and people I know that went there. It looked like he kind of did. Did like something funny, right? rather than a standard comedy show. I didn't know what exactly was going on.
I'll have to ask Eric about it. I just saw Eric yesterday. I didn't see that. But Hardwick, very nice guy, by the way. I always put in a plug for Hardwick because I opened for him once, and he's a really nice guy. And after the show, we were walking out to the parking lot to leave or whatever, and he turned to me and he said, "What do they pay you for a gig like this?" And I said, "I don't know, it was $200 or something." I forget what I said. And he shook his head and goes, $200? He goes, no. He's reached in his pocket, pulled out a fat wad and peeled off some bills and said, come on, man. That was a good job. Have a good night. Totally unsolicited.
Wow.
Not in a douchey, like, Elvis-y, give you a Cadillac way. Like, he just seemed, like, annoyed that comedy didn't pay a little bit more. And he gave me a little bit more money. I thought that was a really, really nice
deal. Very Sinatra of him.
Yeah, it was a really nice. Like I said, he didn't do it in a paternalistic. It was just like a really friendly way. They're a really friendly guy.
No, that's the way Sinatra was.
Oh, yeah? No, good.
That's what I understand. Yeah, that Sinatra was always really generous like that. It's I've known a few comics that that tried to live their life by the rules of Frank Sinatra. John Panette was one of them.
Oh, yeah. Always heard nothing but great things about that guy.
He'd get a bunch of food to bring backstage for everyone to... Everyone to eat after, you know, in between shows. Real, real nice guy. Real, like I said, and that's, I think he was the first one to actually point it out that he's trying to live his life according to the Saint Frank.
Nice.
Of course, he also made he also dissed Frank Sinatra. One of the funniest disses. Our younger listeners might not get these references, but the owner of Zany's actually went up to John and said, "You know, how you getting along?" Because he was opening for Sinatra.
Mm. Oh, really?
Yeah. John Panette was actually opening for Sinatra.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And the owner of Zany's pulls him aside, says, "How you getting along with Frank?" And he goes, "Well, he was a little suspicious of me at first, but then they told him I was Gleason, and now he loves me."
That's pretty funny. That's a good line. And speaking of acne, I will be back there, since we're doing a little plug. I will be back there for the big New Year's week. I'll be there December 26th to the 31st, 9 shows with my buddy Nate Abshire.
Yeah, this is the Who's Funnier series, isn't it?
Yes, the official title of the show is Funnier Than Nate Abshire, featuring Brian Miller. So I feel good about that. It was actually Nate's idea.
Well, actually, I thought it was Funnier Than Nate Abshire, starring Brian Miller.
I don't think there's a question mark.
Okay.
There better not be. There was no question mark in the title that I approved. It was a direct statement. I had a fun little during the show. I had a really funny moment. I do a bit without giving too much of the bit away, and it's also a very long bit. I promise it's a little bit more cerebral and interesting than it sounds. But I inquire how many individual units of the male genitalia that the audience members think they've seen in their entire lives, because I have a theory that everybody kind of knows their number.
Right.
And I ask the question in a purposefully vague way because you get really fascinating answers. And then when you start asking people to break down their reasoning, you find out a lot about them. And it's my favorite interaction bit.
You could turn it into a one-man show. Call it the penis monologue.
I'm already trying not to be the pee finger guy, you know? I'm already steering through some choppy waters here. So I remember asking that question about a year ago, and it was a very, very pretty blonde lady, just very well put together, maybe, I don't know, mid-30s, later 30s, you know, but just look, you know, very confident, very well put together, sitting next to a kind of a handsome guy about her age and nice looking couple. And I asked the question, and then she said, just immediately, without even thinking about it, she said, 100. And the guy's jaw dropped and his head spun around. If he had a monocle, it would have shot across the room. I mean, he was like, 100. And he just reacted really badly in like that 1 second before you get to catch your reaction. And then because they were in the front row, a lot of the other audience members saw it, and it just, the laughter just caught fire. I mean, this guy's reaction was so bad.
Why?
But, and then I felt instantly bad because she looked upset that he was upset and he looked mad. And so I instantly went into Dr. Phil mode and started trying to do some like relationship repair for like 5 solid minutes. I'm talking to this couple, just trying to get it back online. It was a great show, but I felt a little bad. And I was doing that bit again at Acme on Wednesday, and people were shouting out some pretty interesting answers. And then someone from the kind of mid-back.
What's the highest number you got?
Oh, thousands is the highest number
I've
gotten.
Thousands?
Yeah, from nurses. They're always quick to volunteer. Nurses always like, the most. And of course, I always point out to people, if a guy ever says a kind of a low number, if he says 15, I'll say, "Do you have the internet?" And the guy will go, "Oh, yeah." Because my ultimate theory, this whole joke came out of the fact that I realized that, like, I feel like if you were born 75 years ago, you might have to see, like, 5 penises in your entire life. And one of the prices that you pay in modern America is they're just everywhere. Not just the internet, but even like Borat, even the comedies now, they're just all over the place.
We just finished American Gods.
Mm-hmm.
And it's full of them.
And I'm not like, I don't think, it's not like a big deal. I don't care. It just occurs to me that if you really wanted to avoid them, you're just not gonna.
Well, I cannot remember seeing a cable series with so many of them in it. You know, usually in Game of Thrones, you might get a little glimpse.
Sure.
No, but this is long camera, full shot, long period on them. And it's, it was really uncomfortable. It's a friend of mine, Joel Murray.
Oh, I love Joel
actually,
Murray.
Was actually in the show.
Oh, really?
And
he's great. Yeah. I'm rewatching Mad Men right now, and he is just dynamite in it.
And there's one scene where he's got an erection.
Oh no!
It was really disturbing.
So you saw your friends? Oh boy, that's
it. Could have been, if you see. I don't want to give away too much of the plot. Mm. But it could have been computer generated. Sure. But I don't care.
Still, that image ain't going out of your brain. So I asked the question at Acme on a Wednesday, and this someone, if I hear a voice from the back yell, 100 for old time's sake, and I look, and it's the couple. They came back a year later.
Oh man!
And they were still together. And the audience really got a kick out of it because I did the opposite of what that guy did. I was so excited that I think my genuine glee at both seeing them again and seeing that they were still together, I was like, oh, that's so great. I was so happy. And I kind of brought him to the front of the room, and we talked it out. So I said to her, now, you haven't seen it. Have you added any since last I saw you guys? And she said, no. I said, well, I'm glad to hear you're doing well. I'm glad to hear the relationship.
It would have been funny if she would have gone, oh, yeah, 105.
Yeah, and then the guy gets all mad again.
What?
Rinse, repeat. Yeah, it was so funny. It was one of those, I'm mostly a joke writer.
Wasn't Rinse, repeat the chairman of the RNC for a while?
That's very good. I do mostly joke writing stuff, but I really like doing crowd interaction just because I love those little spontaneous moments that come up that you just can't. You could never write those little things. It's just I love.
I have never been good with crowd work. It is just not in my skill set.
That's weird because you're very conversational, you know. So that's, to me, that's kind of what it is.
Yeah, but what I think is funny, it usually is insulting. So my crowd work is, it wouldn't be like you is like 100, you know, and you're shocked, and it's like it's okay, sir. You know, maybe she worked in a trauma center for a while, or you know, and you would be there to patch it up. Mm. I would be there with a pair of hooks and a shaker of salt, pulling that wound open as far as I could and dumping in the salt to the point where nobody would find it funny but me.
Like those poor people would have actually been divorced by the end of your show.
Yeah, or at least they wouldn't come back. Let's put it that way. They would not come back to see. It's, oh, Slagle's in town. Oh, yeah, that's the one who said, I saw 100 penises. How much per penis? How much money do I have in the bank for that? Yeah, that jerk. Yeah, like I'll go see him again. Yeah, I'm not. My sense of humor is too dark and too mean to actually. And I avoid crowd work.
I always try to be super positive, and my natural tendency toward filth tends to pull it in that direction. But I feel like if I swim against the current, I could try to keep it relatively friendly. But yeah, it was great. So I love those little moments. Anymore, I feel like that's my favorite part of comedy, is just those little surprise moments that make the show totally different that you never could have seen coming.
And yes. For some people, the favorite part of this this podcast
is the outro. Yeah.
Oh, it's all the episodes, timslagle.com, iTunes, Podbean, Facebook. Follow us on Facebook. You can catch them there. It's follow me on Twitter at Tim Slagle. Or?
Yep. Follow me at Real Brian Miller and BrianMillerCounty.com. The episodes are up on my website, and post them on my Facebook as well. See you next week.
And, hopefully, a happier day.
Yes, yes. Hopefully, three random happy things happen we can talk about next week.